Scott, Deputy Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chair and members of the committee. Having had the opportunity to present to you this morning, I guess it's even not this afternoon, but just after 12. I'm with the acting head of IPES, Sabine, who is with a team, and they will lead us in the presentation on the IIIT, which is an independent organ of the department, responsible for ensuring that we succeed in what we have been mandated to do of creating an environment where our people feel safe and they are indeed safe, by ensuring that those that have got the responsibility to man our streets do so guided by the Constitution of the Republic, within which we have the Human Rights Charter enshrined. I will not labor because we have been together since presenting. We might have used different ways to explain who we are, but the long and short of it is that we are the South African Police Service, not police services, because in some of the correspondences and the writings here, we have outlined it as the South African Police Services, but it's not the South African Police Services, it's the South African Police Service in terms of the Constitution of the Republic and the South African Police Act. With those comments, through you, if you may allow, I will ask the acting head to introduce the team and make a presentation of the details of our response to the issues we have raised. Chairman, thank you. Over to you.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, Deputy Ministers, we are delighted to be here at IPES today. We always look forward to the opportunity to come and account to the members in terms of the work that we do. And we always, as IPES, appreciate the feedback that we get from members, because we believe that is how we improve our work as IPES. So before we share with the members our annual report, I just want to quickly introduce my team. I'll start on my immediate left here with Mr. Matthew Sisoko, who is the head of investigation in IPES. And the next to Mr. Sisoko, we've got Ms. Susan Dittlake, who is the head of planning and strategy in IPES. And then next to Ms. Dittlake, we've got Advocate Morasi, who is the head of legal in IPES. And then next to her, we've got Memo Lopez, who is the head of stakeholder engagement and integrity strengthening. And then next to Memo Lopez, we've got Dr. Patrick Sitedi, who is the acting chief financial officer. And then next to Ntate Sitedi, we've got Ntate Mamabuni, who is the head of admin in the office of the executive director. And then at the far left, we've got Mayor Vivian Slawley, who is the head of internal audit in IPES. And then there at the back, from Ntate Mahobotiti, who is our parliamentary officer. So, Chairperson, we, with your permission, we'll start then with the presentation of our annual report.
You may continue.
Thank you very much. Just for my presentation, Chairperson, is going to cover eight areas. It's going to cover the high level summary in terms of the performance. Number two, we'll then look at the key achievements and successes during 2018-19. Number three, We are going to look at the issue of the regular expenditure, which has already been reported by the Auditor General in this committee. And then from there, we'll then touch on the issue of the IFRS financial statement for 2018-19. And then from there, then we'll then focus on the issues of performance against our target. We'll start with a high level, and from there, each of the program managers will then go into details in terms of their performance during 2018-19. And then from there, internal audit will then take us through the analysis of AGASA findings and also measures that we are implementing to make sure that those findings don't occur again, and then we'll then conclude on our presentation. As part of my introduction, Chairperson, I just want to emphasize the issue that IFID is one of those institutions that are at the forefront of fighting corruptions, you know, in addition to institutions like your COGS, your public protector, and also the police. So we are one of those institutions that are at the forefront of fighting corruption in the country. And then number two, I'm emphasizing the issue that IFID is still greatly underfunded. And this underfunding leads to two things, or it led to two things during the 2018-19 financial year. The first impact of this is that we experienced an increase in our workload, which increased from 9,097 in 2017-18 to about 11,965 in 2018-19. And when we are looking or doing the comparison, Honourable Member, of our capacity vis-à-vis the police, which we are supposed to investigate, we currently have 128 investigators in total, as I think, compared to over 65,000 for the police. So when you look at the ratio, it's one investigator is 1,130 police officers. So we are saying that this it certainly is a problem, because you will always have this backlog in terms of the case that you're investigating. And one of the impacts of not having adequate funding has been that we were forced to close five satellite offices, which greatly impact on our accessibility, especially in those rural communities. And then number three, I'm talking to the issue of ICT infrastructure. During the year under review, we had already started the process of trying to modernize our operations so that we can improve internal efficiency. And also, Chairperson, I also wanted to highlight the fact that due to these challenges that I've already mentioned, that it's causing a low morale in our staff. This workload and shortage of resources, and investigators that need to travel long distances as a result of closure of satellites, it creates low morale among our investigators. The fifth point that I'm making there, Chairperson, is that even though there's an overall stability at an SMS level within IFID, with the exception, of course, of the security director, you'll find that at a lower level, there's a high turnover. People come and go all the time, because when they join IFID, they find that there's a lot of workloads within IFID. And then on slide number five, I'm now going into the key achievements and successes for 2018-19, as outlined in our annual report. Sorry. So overall, Chairperson, our overall improvement has improved from 65% in 2017-18 to 83% this past financial year, which means there's been an increase of about 18% in our overall performance. And then this past financial year, we've referred a total of 2,044 cases to the NPA for decision and prosecution. And then we've also managed to secure about 91 criminal convictions this past financial year. And also we've made a total of 2,337 recommendations to SAFs. Out of those, 1,464 were positive recommendations, meaning that the investigation was conducted and that police officer was found not guilty or was cleared, in a simpler way. And then 873 recommendation was negative, where disciplinary action needed to be taken against those police officers. I think that is the figure that Civilian Secretariat was talking to when they said that normally we find that when they compare between us and South, we find that there are differences. And then we've also managed to secure about 207 disciplinary convictions. And we've maintained our unqualified audit opinion with improved findings from last financial year. And also this past financial year at Jefferson, we also, as part of trying to cut costs, especially in our fleet services, we decided that let's procure our own vehicles so that we're able to return the vehicles to G-Fleet, which are quite expensive for the IPs. And then on slide number 6, Chairperson, what we are trying to demonstrate there is the issue where we are trying to show the intake comparison since 2012-18 to 2018-19. So it started at about 6,728 in 2012-18, and then last year our intake was 5,829. So you can see that on average we receive about 5.5 thousands in terms of the cases that we receive on an annual basis. And then on slide number 7, Chairperson, what we are trying to show is that these are the successes of IKIP since 2014, 2018-19. So we wanted to show members that we prepared 6,497 cases NPA is being prosecuted. This means that this is why IPG has done an investigation and the investigation is ready to prosecute it. So we refer these cases to the NPA so that they can take the process forward. And then we've made a total of 7,700 recommendations to South African Police Services. And when you look at the disciplinary convictions over the 5 years, it's 1,160. And then the criminal convictions is 390. So you always have to look at this criminal conviction in line with the recommendations that we prepared to the NPA. I think recently, Chairperson, we've been very vocal, but we've been engaging with the NPA because there's a backlog in terms of prosecuting our cases. So we've been trying to engage with the NPA to say, can you move in terms of making sure that our cases are prosecuted? So that those that have been found wanting can be held accountable. And then on slide number 8, Chairperson, as confirmed by the Auditor General, we have incurred an irregular expenditure which amounts to 1.824 million. And I must also indicate that this irregular expenditure was incurred in 2017. However, it was only audited by AGFA in this past financial year. So basically there are two issues. It was the irregular appointment of Fidelity. That is, Fidelity was appointed without following proper supply chain processes. The amount there is 615,000. And the second one was the irregular appointment of our cell phone analyst. The cost there is the salary that has been paid to the official to date, which is 1.1 million. And until this amount is condoned, it means the regular expenditure will keep on growing in our books. So the recommendation that was made by Auditor General, it was three recommendations. Firstly, the AGSA said, IPP must investigate the regular expenditure to determine who within IPP needs to be held accountable. And secondly, you must initiate disciplinary actions against those who caused the regular expenditure. And then the third recommendation was to say the losses incurred as a result of this irregular expenditure must be recovered from the people who were involved. And then they did indicate that when they come back and they will be following up on this. So Chairperson, since the finding was made by AGSA, already we finalized the process of internal investigation. The Financial Misconduct Committee internally has finalized that process. And then we commence now with the process of disciplinary action. So there what happened is that already we've appointed the initiators who are going to lead the disciplinary action against the official. And we are hoping that this process will move as quickly as possible so that those who have been identified can then make their case and that's independent and private so that the decision can be made. Well, Chairperson, that is a high-level summary in terms of the performance. But also, Chairperson, I felt that I need to also talk to the issue that has been in the media, that is the issue of where there were accusations that IUPID prematurely closed the cases so that, you know, they can inflate the performance debt. And Chairperson, what I want to highlight is that these allegations, they started in 2012. In 2012, there was a complaint that was registered with the public protector. So public protector then came back and said there are no merits to the complaint. And then in 2014, they disappeared again. And then 2016, then the then ethics officer also made the same complaint to the then acting executive director. So what was done immediately by the then executive director? Firstly, he instructed that investigation should be conducted. So Gauteng office, they started with the Gauteng office. So out of the Gauteng office, they identified that there were few incidents where cases were prematurely closed. So what then happened is that two officials, one official was disciplined, and then the second official then resigned from IPID. And then in addition to that, a case was then registered. That was the case of defeating the ends of justice. It was then registered with the South African Police Services. And then in addition to that, what the then acting, the executive director did, he said, extend this investigation to cover all the provinces so that we can then determine if or the extent of this problem. So the investigation was done at all the provinces. So the report, Chairperson, I've directed that I want that report immediately. So the comment that we got from our integrity center is that the report will be released on the 18th. And what I will do is to then share the report with the minister as well as the portfolio committee to say this is what we've identified. So what I also want to emphasize, colleagues, or members, honorable members, is that this incident, they relate to that period between 2012 and 2018. And since it was reported to the management, already action has been taken internally to prevent this one. Firstly, our SOP was revised so that we can address if there are any loopholes internally that maybe might have caused this thing. And secondly, what we are currently doing, our integrity strengthening unit, they regularly go to provinces and inspect each and every docket so that we can be assured that there are no irregularities when it comes to this. And thirdly, the AGSA, as compared to SAPS, they go and audit each and every docket. So whatever is published in the annual report is confirmed by the AGSA. So I thought, Chairperson, I need to highlight this thing because now these things have been again rehashed. I mean, it's the allegation that relates to before 2016, but they came back again in the media. And I must also emphasize, Chairperson, that previously we accounted to the portfolio committee on the same matter for the fifth administration. IPID came to account, and the portfolio committee, they understood the facts as presented by IPID. IPID also went to SCOPA on the same issue, as well as the select committee in the previous administration. So we are more than willing, honorable members, if there's any clarity that members need on this matter, to come and account on this matter. I think I saw a question that has been running in the media to say, who does IPID account to? We account to this committee. We also account to the minister. So those are the two authorities where we account to. Also the AGSA report oversight in terms of our work, and we also comply to the other oversight bodies that are there, like your public protector, who has again investigated IPID. So we account to different structures in terms of our work, and we are always willing and available to account to anyone who's got any issues that they want to raise when it comes to the issues of performance. So, Chairperson, I thought I should just briefly touch on that. If there are any questions later, we'll address those in detail. So I will then hand over to our CFO, who will then take us through the financial statements.
Thanks, Chairperson, honourable members, and the DM. I'm going to take the honourable members through the financial statements of the organisations for the period under review in 19 financial year. My presentation will cover legislative requirements, audit outcomes, summary audited expenditure environment, rollover, unauthorized expenditure fruitless, irregular, as well as the focus areas to improve the accountability. Chairperson and honourable members, first slide, just to remind the House of the legislative requirements that govern the preparation of the financial statements. The department has used, like any other department, the Public Financial Management Act, Treasury regulations, as well as the modified cash standards in order to prepare the annual financial statements. The following slide, Chairperson, just to also share with the members, honourable members here, that the department has received the unqualified audit opinion, which is maintained from the financial year 17-18. We have also reduced a quite significant audit findings that are related to compliance in this financial year, and we are working towards the achievement of the clean audit. Chair, there were two key audit compliance that were raised by the Auditor General during the end review. One related to the regular expenditure that the DND has alluded to, and the second one related to payment of invoices. Late payment of invoices, where when we realize that the budget has been depleted, we start setting some of the invoices aside. So that resulted in 30 days payment non-compliance. The next slide, which is just a comparison from last financial 17-18 and 18-19 in terms of what has been allocated to the program and what has been spent. The following slide, Chair, talks to the environment that the department has done. In the year under review, during the adjustment budget for 2018, the department made internal fund shift of 6.1 million from two programs, administration and compliance monitoring and stakeholder management, in order to assist in shortage of investigation equipment. That approval has since been signed by National Treasury during the adjustment budget. And the money was shifted from the compensation of employees to be delayed in filling of the vacant positions. The next slide talks to the unauthorized expenditure. I think it must be clear to indicate to the House that the department did not incur any unauthorized expenditure in a year under review. The amount that has been indicated in our books emanate from the previous financial year 5-6 as well as 8-9 respectively. So we have since made a request from National Treasury to SCOPA so that they can assist us in authorizing the amount, because when we looked at the amount, we found that there was no person who was negligent. It was the savings that were rendered to the departments and two programs in those years exceeded their allocation due to budgetary constraints. So National Treasury has assisted. They've written to SCOPA. We are still waiting for SCOPA to give us a combination on this one. The next one is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Chair, we have tried as an organization to put a quite number of internal control systems to look at this part. And we are very clear to the staff members that we, as an organization, we don't have budget for fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So what happened is that if there's any fruitless that has been incurred, the officials will be personally liable, because we are not going to accommodate it into our budget. So the year under review, there were two cases that were identified. One was interest incurred on Telkom account, and the other one was the late renewal of vehicle licenses. The one on interest, we have since engaged Telkom, but we realized that our systems, billing systems, are not talking to each other in terms of date. Telkom will then count 30 days from the date of their invoice, even if they send to you after 5 days, while we count 30 days from the date in which we receive the invoice. But we have since addressed that. And the other one was also on the renewal of licenses. We have since communicated with the affected official, and the financial misconduct is looking at that matter. It's about less than 1,000. The next slide, Chairperson, is irregular expenditure one. the accounting officer, the acting accounting officer, has talked to the first one in the year, and that would be 1.8 million was identified and reported in our financial statement, and it was also confirmed by the Auditor General during their audit. And then the other part of the regular expenditure check, we have just given the half year the update with regard to the amount that was disclosed in 17-18 financial year. We are in communication with National Treasury with regard to this one, and we have provided all the documentation for them to assist us. The last slide from my side, Chair. These are the focus areas to improve accountability. We are trying to strengthen our internal controls, ensuring that compliance with applicable legislation, because this is what we came out during the audit, and we are saying we need to look into what the Auditor General has indicated so that we can improve in that area. Implementation and monitoring of all policies. There have been quite a number of policies that have been approved by the accounting officer, which then need to be implemented, and we need to monitor those policies. So with the implementation of all these systems, we'll then have to improve our audit outcomes in order to achieve what we call a clean audit. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The next presenter will be Melissa Pills, going to talk to the issue of McDonald's.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good afternoon to the Honorable Members and the Deputy Minister. On this slide, we are reflecting the overall performance of the department. As the MPEC has already touched on the improvement of the department's performance, we have improved as compared to 17-18 from 65% to 83% on achievement of our set target for the period under review. And we also want to clarify the issue of the indicators for legal services. Honourable Members will remember that even when we were presenting our APT, we did explain the fact that in the year 17-18, legal services was discontinued as a budget program, and it was later reinstated. So the indicators for legal services in 18-19, they were then split between Program 1 and Program 2. So the overall performance as reflected under the last column on 18-19 is the consolidation of Program 1, Program 2, and Program 4. Because in the period under review, legal services was not a standalone program. So, but generally, there was an improvement across all the programs, with the exception of Program 4, where their performance was consistent, has been consistent when compared to the year
17-18.
I will proceed to the presentation on program performance for Program 1 administration. The first indicator, which is a strategic indicator, is the number of strategic training areas undertaken as per IT training plan. And the target that was set is 7, and the output, what we achieved, is 18, and the target was exceeded, and this is due to the collaboration with our teachers. So the target that we set for ourselves was in line with the available budget. So the reason why we exceeded is due to the collaboration with our teachers. On the next slide, slide 23, the first program performance indicator is the performance, the percentage vacancy rate per year, and the target is 10%, and the achievement, the output is 13.49%, so the target was not achieved because the intention is to ensure that our vacancy rate is below 10%. And the reason the target was not achieved is due to the concurrence of the structure, which was still not obtained from the DPSA, and also internal self-promotion, which also contributes to the vacancy rate. But when we take out the number of the newly created posts, which is 24, we are then left with, when we calculate the vacancy rate with the exclusion of the 24 newly created positions, it then takes us to 8.1%. So for 13.49%, we were having 56 posts that were vacant, over 460. The next indicator is on the percentage implementation of the annual internal audit plan. The target was 80% and we achieved 92%. The target was exceeded. And the percentage implementation of the risk mitigation strategies, the target that was set is 40% and we achieved 44%. And this is in relation to the strategic risk. And the next indicator is the number of evaluations conducted per year. The target was to have an approved evaluation plan, and the target was achieved. The next indicator is the percentage of recent legal opinions provided to the department within 30 working days of request. The target was 70%, and we achieved 88%. The next indicator is the percentage of contracts or service level agreements finalized within 30 working days of request. The target was 70%, and we exceeded the target. We achieved 94%. The last slide for Program 1's performance, it speaks to the strategies that we are implementing in order to overcome areas of underperformance. So in Program 1, it was only one indicator where we experienced challenges, is the issue of the vacancy rate. And as indicated, the reason was the delays in obtaining concurrence from the DPSA. And we have met with the DPSA. The meeting took place on the 1st of October this year. And the outcome of the meeting was that DPSA, in principle, they are in agreement with our proposed structure. However, what is still outstanding is that we still need to cost our structure and allow National Treasury to confirm the sustainability of our proposed structure and also the finding of the structure. So that will also be informed by the allocations that we are still awaiting for the 2020 NTEF. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The Head of Investigations will then take us through the performance of Program 2.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. For Program 2, on the strategic indicators, we have the number of investigators trained on specialized training plan per year. Our target was 75, we achieved 104, exceeded the target. The second one is percentage of decision making completed from the total cases received. The target was 45%, we achieved only 35%, and this was attributed to, the target was not achieved due to prioritization of cases and outstanding technical reports. Internal reports include ballistic reports, service meter, toxicology, post-mortem, DNA, and DNA reports. Percentage of legal advice provided to investigators before and after investigation, the target was 90%. It was achieved at 100%. And then for program performance indicators, percentage of cases registered and allocated within 72 hours of receipt. The target was 79%, exceeded the target by 87%. Number of statistical reports generated as per Section 9N of the IPA Act. Target is 2, we achieved the 2. Number of investigations of death in police custody that are teaching ready. Target was 150 cases. We achieved 154 cases. We exceeded the target. Number of investigations of death as a result of police action that are teaching ready. Target was 130. We achieved 157. We exceeded the target. Number of investigation of cases of discharge of an official firearm by a police officer that are teaching ready. The target was not achieved. The target is 500. We were only able to do 37. This is due to outstanding ballistic reports of 134 cases. If we had had these reports, we would have been at 476 cases. And then tracking members deployed from provinces to conduct operations during quarters, especially for the border police, was also a challenge in completing this investigation. Number of investigations of rape by police officers that are seen rape, the target was 65. We were able to exceed the target and our output was 100. Number of investigations of rape while in police custody, the target was 10. We exceeded the target, we achieved 12. Number of investigations of torture that are seen ready, the target was 60, we achieved 81. Number of investigations of assault that are seen ready, the target is 2,000, we did not meet the target, we achieved 1,994 cases, and this due to outstanding J88 report, and the fact that we also prioritize cases. And these kind of cases do not fall under those priority cases because of our constrained resources. Number of investigations of corruption that have been seen ready, the target was 60. We were able to achieve the output of 60. Number of investigations of other criminal and misconduct matters, the target was 80. We could not achieve the target, we are at 57. And this was also due to privatization that could not achieve this target. Number of systemic corruption investigated that is in ready. The target is 4, we achieved. The target is 2, we achieved 4, we exceeded the target. Number of backlog decision ready cases finalized. Excluding systemic corruption, the target is 1,250, we exceeded the target. We are at 1,415. And percentage of dockets referred to the National Prosecuting Authority within 30 days of being signed off. The target was 90%, we did 96%. Number of personal recommendation reports referred to Southern Police Service and Municipal Police Service within 30 days of recommendations being signed off. The target was 90%, we were able to do 93%. Percentage of oral legal advice provided to investigators within 24 hours. The target was 90%, we achieved 100%. Percentage of written legal advice provided to investigators within 2 working days of requests, the target was 90%, 100% was achieved. Percentage of buyer requests analyzed within 30 days, the target was 100%, only 95% was achieved due to non-cooperation of the requester by not providing additional information. These specific targets relate to legal services as already indicated by Mr. Sabo. The next slide speaks to the referrals that we give to the NPA. We categorize them from in terms of provinces and the category of cases that we investigate in terms of Section 28. Members will note that we did 2,044 referrals in the NPA. And the next slide speaks to the outcome of criminal referrals made to the NPA. Members will note that of the 2,044, 1,475 were still outstanding response from NPA, 412 declined, 77 there were queries that we had to deal with, 21 request, 55 prosecute, and 4 were withdrawn. The next slide speaks to recommendations referred to NPA. Members will note that we had 2,327 referrals. Positive recommendations where we cleared members of wrongdoing was 1,454. negative recommendations were recommended that disciplinary action be taken against members. It was 873 cases. Recommendations referred to SAPS, the classification. This slide shows different classifications of all these referrals that we've made to the SAPS. And the next slide talks to types of recommendations referred in respect of the municipal police. Members will note that it's 29 of those cases. 12 of them were positive recommendations, where we cleared members of the municipal police, and 19 were negative recommendations, where we recommended that additional actions be taken. The next slide gives a breakdown of the municipalities, the metros, as well as the different categories of cases that we investigate in respect of those matters referred for disciplinary. The next slide talks to the feedback on the disciplinary matters that we refer those with now the negative recommendations that we validated earlier. You note that 232 disciplinary actions were initiated. I think still awaits feedback on 409 cases, 117 cases, members were found guilty, 25 cases, members were found not guilty, in 75 cases no steps were taken, 14 were withdrawn, and in one matter a member resigned from service. And feedback on the municipal police matters, on the positive recommendations was 12, disciplinary initiated, we had 3 matters, where we are waiting feedback is 8 matters, where members were dismissed 2, not guilty 1, no steps taken 2, and the member resigned 1. On strategies to overcome areas of underperformance, we held monthly meetings with SAPS, Department of Health at provincial level on outstanding reports. We procured additional vehicles to increase investigators' tools so that more investigators can go out and investigation. We engaged with SAPS management on cases involving members from public order policing. Continuous engagement with clients requesting information for further requests. And we've drafted MOUs with SAPS on shared services to be finalized. This MOU is still sitting with the SAPS. In fact, we've recently got contact from the National Commissioner that they want us to finalize this MOU. Just chairperson also to deal again with the issues that the executive director dealt with in relation to the recent media report. I think it's important that we make the committee understand also the background to why these things are coming through. As the executive director indicated, these issues came from a former employee who was dismissed from our ethics unit. And this employee was attending a arbitration last Friday. So it's not a surprise that these things are coming through again. But this is an employee who even during 2012, 2014, there's been an engagement. For the record, the employee was dismissed in 2013, I think, because of similar issues, going to the media, leaking information, publishing misinformation about the department. When Mr. McBride was appointed to the department, he reinstated the said employee. And in 2014, in 2016, he started with the same issues. What happened is in 2016, when these issues were raised, investigations, the executive director directed that investigations be conducted by the integrity unit, which was established when these things started coming forward. And it is true that from the investigations, because we agreed that the investigation must concentrate on all the provinces and not only the two provinces that were identified in the initial complaint. Now, as a result of the investigation by the Integrity Sensing Unit, Gauteng office, these issues were picked up where cases were not properly investigated and were closed. An employee has been dismissed as a result of that investigation. One employee resigned when he was confronted with this investigation. But to show that the department was taking these matters seriously, the case was open when the Integrity Unit, as they were investigating, they realized that there was in fact indication that these things were happening in Gauteng, and there were specific individuals that were involved in it. They even laid criminal charges of defeating the ends of justice in 2018 already against those individuals. That matter, I'm informed that they've had engagement with the MPA, and soon there will be a decision on it. But the outcome of the entire investigation and the verdict that has indicated we're awaiting the final report on all the provinces. Now, the report goes on further to even put aspersions on some of our investigators. For instance, we find a report saying one of our investigators, Mr. Anthony and Ms. Van der Sand, closed a lot of cases in 1 day, you know. And this is based on this former employee's misunderstanding of our investigative process. And it's the same employee did exactly the same thing, went to Marani Commission and made statements there about the department and investigation processes of IP, which he didn't understand, which were completely false. So we had to go and again make people understand that this person is a misunderstanding. If this person has come to us, people who are involved in investigation and explain to him how this process works, he would have understood this. So even in this regard, that's the same thing. For instance, when our investigators go out and conduct an investigation, they'll go and do an investigation and obtain all necessary evidence. It will take some time for that to happen. But once they've concluded that, they will present their dockets to their managers who are mentioned in this report. The managers will go through this report, these dockets, to check if quality investigation elsewhere our standard operating procedures has been done. Once they are satisfied with that, then they will have to endorse those controls in the dockets. But further to that, because we use the case management system, they need to go on the case management system to go and update this information on the case management system to show that an investigation has been completed. So a manager will then be able to, on a day, be able to work on more than 10, 20, it depends how many files you are able to work on, you know. And sometimes people work until very late, you know, to update the system on this matter that are working on. So when reports come as if what they are doing is something wrong because people don't understand how we do our work, it's really different because at the end of the day, it's misinformation. If people took time to come and ask how does it work and how do we do our work, we could have explained these things to them rather than rushing to the media and stretching out information for their own agendas, which is not accurate. Thank you.
Thank you. And then the last presentation is
okay. In this program, we have got one strategic indicator which talks to the percentage implementation of integrated communication and stakeholder engagement strategy. The target there was 90%. And in terms of output, we have 92%. So it was achieved. In terms of the program performance indicators, we have 6 in the past financial year. Number 1 being the number of community outreach events conducted per year. The target there was 80. The output 106. The target was exceeded. The next one, number of women and women heard with key stakeholders per year, the target there was also exceeded. Number of disciplinary recommendations referred to the SAPS and NPS that are analyzed, we had a target of 1,000, it was also exceeded. The next one, the number of criminal referrals forwarded to NPA that are analyzed, the target was set at 748. The achievement was 1,950, which was above the target. The next indicator, percentage of responses from staff and NPS that are analyzed, we set the target at 50% and we reached 63%. The last one, percentage of responses from the NPA that are analyzed, the target was also set at 50% and we achieved 59%. The target was exceeded. Overall, all the targets were achieved in this program.
Thank you very much. And then the last part, Chairperson, is the analysis of audit outcome. I may answer that.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Members. I'll be taking through members through a summary of the analysis of our audit findings. In total, we have about 81 audit findings for which we already have an action plan with implementation date and progress. But for the purpose of the presentation, what we did was just to analyze and give members an overview of what is the current status. I think I must also mention that this has been a great achievement, improvement compared to the previous 2 years. We had a qualified audit opinion in 16-17 with 52 findings. We moved to 17-18 where now we had an unqualified audit opinion, but it's still the number of findings of final audit was 50. And with the strategy that we adopted in 18-19 to move towards a clean audit, which we felt it was possible, we were now at the end of the financial year with still one finding still unqualified. We have categorized the findings as in terms of compliance findings, governance, as well as internal control. And then, as I've already alluded to, action plans have been developed by management, which we are monitoring as internal audit, also through management meetings as well, including the audit committee. And then, since colleagues have already mentioned that there's an integrity strengthening unit that is also doing a docket inspection, so that is the monitoring in, for the performance information, the findings that I raised relating to investigation. Now, just a summary of the compliance findings, we had about five findings that were raised. The first one was the 30 days, as already mentioned by the acting CFO, where the issue of consequence management, where the issue of the irregular expenditure was flagged. We also had an issue on ICT. We had issues with our firewall system, which we could not get right in 1819, which was also a complaint issue. Also on ICT, we had an issue relating to the control room, the server room, which because of our current buildings, we cannot really do much until we move to new buildings. And the last one, where issues were in the financial statement, we had some misinterpretation of the standards, which we were later advised accordingly by the National Treasury, and then we were able to close correctly. So in total, it's five findings. The common root causes, like I said, is the analysis is your budgetary constraints, improper report keeping, which has caused majority of findings. You will see when we move to the next slide, and then the misinterpretation. Colleagues have already mentioned that we have prioritized funds as part of the action plan, and this relates mostly to your ICT, where management took a decision that it is better to forego some of the activities so that we improve our ICT infrastructure, which has been a great cause for concern as far as affecting performance is concerned. We also regularly monitor the expenditure to see which areas can we attend to so that we are addressing service delivery as well as compliance issues. And there were also issues around contract management, where we actually did not really have a specific contract management function but after the findings, management has managed to gather around officials who are now specifically looking at contract management, and then there's also strict monitoring of record keeping, because what we realize that we also have issues of space wherein there is no, we do not have a record management unit because of budget constraints. So you get to instances where officials are attending to record management in their own ways, like how they know how to do it. So when the AG comes and looks for document, it takes time at some point to get the document, and AG will raise the finding, but eventually the findings will be cleared because now the AG has received the findings. But they will always say that the findings cannot be removed because they must highlight the issue of improper record keeping. The next one was governance. It was four of them. It was three of them relating to policy issues. We had late approval of policies where the AG came as at the end of 31st March. There were quite a number of policies that were not approved. And that is budget that is not really signed by the proper reason, but the departure of the executive director did affect some operations, wherein all submissions that had been made relating to policies had to be resubmitted now to the new executive director, who also noted that there were some gaps in how we're reviewing our policy workshops that will be undertaken. But I think what is good to report is that by the time the AGSA finalized the audit on the 31st July, the policies that had been flagged were already approved by the now acting executive director. We also had cases now that were identified by the AGSA as not being attended to in terms of consequence management, and one of the cases was the irregular expenditure that was noted at the time when the AGSA was auditing us, and prior to that, these were the cases that were being handled by other external through external processes. The public protector was investigating some of the issues. And we also had other cases of fruitless and irregular that were attributed to the then acting executive director, which through legal services, they are trying to recover the funds. So we could not, as a department, have made any strides. And at the end, when we explained and said that with the AG, they did get that. And then we also, like I think the colleagues have already mentioned, we have a financial misconduct committee. This committee was established to actually deal with such matters when they have been alleged transgressions, so that these are addressed. And what has been probably the shortcoming is the timing in their meetings. The commitment was that it will be monthly if there are cases in the register or when a new case is being reported, because all the current cases have been attended to. It's just other processes that must be finalized. And then for internal control, that's where we had a lot of findings, 22 of them. 9 were from the performance information. This is now the work that is done through processes, the investigations themselves. Because what we realized when we are engaging, before even the AGSA come, when we're engaging to make sure that we're ready for the audit, is we have issues of record keeping where a case is finalized, but one or two documents are not there. And we always communicate to our colleagues that in terms of validating, when the AG comes, the AG will never let us report anything when documentation is not intact in a filing. So this has been the case, but I must maybe note that there's been improvement, although we are still dealing with this. In the previous financial year, 2017-18, we were actually qualified on performance information, but this year we are unqualified also on performance information. Improvement is there, but it's something that we still need to look at. We realize that provincial management seem to hold back in terms of executing their managerial role in totality, meaning that lack of consequence management when things are not done properly is still a bit lacking. So what we have as a department agreed to that every month, actually we started I think around April last this year, before even the AG finalized their audit, provincial management is required to submit a complaint certificate every month to confirm that everything is intact, so that when we come as internal audit, and other service other assurance providers who should be going to check if all is well, we know that we are reviewing you on what you said was okay. This in turn will assist the executive director to take any form of consequence management when we find that files are not in order. Yeah, I think maybe just to also emphasize that, honorable members, the budgetary constraints are really affecting any type of internal oversight that is desired in IPIT. We have internal audit as the last assurance provider, but we also have units like a strategy and performance monitoring where your integrity strategy. And we have great plans on how we can overcome and execute these internal control measures, but most of the time we are hindered by finances. In internal audit, we have to approach on a risk management basis, meaning that it's not like we can go to each and every province every year. There are provinces that we have not visited in like 3 years because we must prioritize that which ones can we forego, which ones must we go. So as much as the department does try to accommodate us, they can only accommodate us to a certain point because there are activities that must still go on. So what we have decided is that we are going to follow our combined assurance plan that we are currently consulting with other units to make sure that to some extent we can cover areas that need to be covered, but even then it's still based on risk management, because at this stage, in the 4 years that I've been with IP, we have never been able to say in internal audit, we can say that we have visited provinces, I can give you the assurance that all is well because of financial constraints. But the improvement we are working towards it, and I mean, maybe just to also touch on those statistics that we are supposedly inflating, alleging to be inflating, I just need to give members the assurance that even if we were corrupt to the core, and indeed we were trying to cook up and finalizing cases in manners that are not in line, there is no way that those processes can escape the hand of the AG. I work with them when they come, and I can assure members we would have a case file where one or two documents are missing, but you know an investigation has taken place, and AG will tell you, take it off. In the 15-16 financial year that keeps on being mentioned, we had to take off about 1,000 of cases because one document is not there. Investigators are misplacing, could be in the file, but the AG would never allow anything to get to the annual report, and it will be verified. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in conclusion, I just want to again reiterate that IPID has always been very transparent and open about this issue that happened between 2012 and 2016. I think the former acting executive director was very vocal. Even at the Zondo Commission, he did say that something went wrong between 2012 and 2016. I think what is important is what have we done as IPID to make sure that these things never happen again. And I've already explained that already we've put measures in place to make sure that there are no issues when it comes to our performance statistics. And also just to make an appeal maybe to the media to say, let's not muddy the good work that our investigators are doing. They sacrifice a lot. As I've already said, we've got very few investigators who have to deal with a lot of cases. And most of them, they spend sleepless nights trying to make sure that the justice achieved for people who register these cases. So, Chairperson, on that note, thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. I think what you should do is to prepare a proper written response on the issues we have raised, which was not part of what we submitted here. But we felt that coming here, we must not put our heads in the sand and just give you this and not respond to the issues that are there, because indeed IPED is one of the institutions that is doing very well. But what is coming up will muddy the waters and create an impression that we have got a confused institution that is doing things but putting up wrong things, doctoring cases. Which is not the case. I think the work of what they do, it speaks for itself. Even within the police service, you know, they will tell you that I paid. So it means that they are there. What they do is felt, and they need to get all the necessary support. And from the ministry, we have made that commitment with the minister that we give them all the necessary support. We are also facilitating that they should be an interaction between the head of IPID and the National Commissioner, so that they are given the necessary support, because without that support materially, they will not be able to carry out their responsibilities. But up to now, we're satisfied with the work that they are doing. They are a team that is well-led and doing very well. We will speed up the process of finalizing the appointment of the head of IPED, so that we move with leadership, not at an acting capacity as the case currently. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Before I take hands, Deputy Minister, and stop and Honourable Lambert's point, we know that on the 18th the report will be released. Yes, but it will also be released to us. Am I correct in saying that we will also receive that report on the 18th?
Yes.
So this then should be the moment in which we analyze the report and make the necessary evaluations and comments. So for now, the committee should be averse to making judgment calls until we have the full report. The problem that we have now is that there is a reputational risk and a confidence deficit. So the trust which we have in IPED has been compromised. And the trust which the public is supposed to have in IPED has been compromised. So the media reports are thus worrying. Not whether they are true or not, but they're worrying because of the damage it is doing to the image of the police and the image of us as a collective. So if there's any systematic statistical manipulation or any cover-up of police criminality by ICE, now is the time just to be totally transparent. Not to say it happened in 2016 or 2017. Let us just be totally transparent. You know, open the books, allow yourself to scrutinize, because your reputation has been tarnished. Whether it has been done by one of your own, we have to face the consequences now of the type of media reports we have out there in the country. But the committee should also view these reports in a serious light. If it happened once before or previously, we need to know that this behavior has been addressed sufficiently and completely, and that this behavior does not persist in IPED. So once we have this transparent approach, you get to the bottom of this. So I'm asking that when we do give out, you know, we have a fair and balanced approach to it, that if we want to make judgment calls, you do so. And I'll give the committee as much time as possible to come in to ask questions, because we have to instill confidence in IPED. It's a very important institution which the public at large is looking at. And we have to say that when you leave, or when, after we have received the report on the 18th, that as a committee we have confidence in the work you are doing. I've noted Honourable Whitfield, Honourable Mofokeng, Honourable De Blanche, I'm giving it to you in that order, Shembeni, Faku, in that order, you may continue, Honourable Whitfield.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just before I begin, I think it might be useful, and I hope I'm the only one who's confused, for the acting head, just to clarify, first we heard there was manipulation of cases or prematurely claimed and that admission and that there was action taken. And then at the end we heard that it's not possible because the AG would never produce a report. Can I just get clarity? It appeared to be conflicting information. I don't want anybody taking information out of the meeting that's not consistent.
Could we please clarify this? Really, today we are talking about information that goes the other way. Could we clarify this, please?
Yes, Chairperson. When I opened, I did indicate that between 2012 and 2016, there was an allegation. Allegation was investigated, and yes, it was confirmed that in Gauteng there were incidents where cases were closed prematurely. And then from there, then action was taken against those officials. I think you also explained that one official was dismissed, one was or resigned, and then a criminal case was also open in addition to that. And then based on what we get from the final report, we'll also act. We are not going to hesitate to act if we find out that throughout the provinces there were also similar incidents. So to confirm, Honourable Member, yes, in Gauteng we did pick up incidents.
You may
continue. I think the last comment that the member is referring to was made by myself. That is when they're saying manipulated steps. You know, we are reporting cases that were not investigated. And I'm saying anything that the public consumes via this annual report and any report, the information that is there is the one that is sent by the AGSA. So yes, it could be happening. But come audit time, that's why I'm saying there are instances when the AG would demand that, no, remove this number, we are not convinced, and we have to remove it. So those are the cases that when it's identified, even if it's done internally, when it's identified, like you're saying, the AG is saying, that you identify cases, immediately the performance unit would remove those from there. But what I was addressing was this notion that the stats that are out there of the IP performance, it's manipulated, it's not real, and I'm saying the AGSA would never allow us to publish something that is not validated. I hope it makes sense now. Thank you. Honorable Woodley.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. That does clarify. Chairperson, I want to just at the outset say that there is no more important job for this committee than the work we do with the people in front of us. We cannot build an honest and professional police service in South Africa without the contribution of IP. That's the bottom line. So I don't believe that we should take any allegations lightly. And I'm very pleased to hear what the acting executive director has said, and Chairperson, what you have said as well. The historical nature of the allegations are concerning, and I think it would only be fair to wait for that report and to receive a full briefing from IPED on the contents of that report, so that the committee can interrogate the findings of the report. So it's one thing sending us the report, it's another thing coming to present before this committee in a dedicated session, so that the committee may have time to consider, even before 2012, to review annual reports, to look at minutes of committee meetings, to review all engagements with IPED. Because one of the things that acting, and we've had this engagement before, but acting leadership indirectly avoids accountability. You don't have permanent leadership, you don't have permanent accountability in an organization. And that is why this committee has consistently raised two very important things. The one is the fact that IPED is critically under-resourced, Deputy Minister. It is critically under-resourced. That must be a focused area for the work that we do in this committee. And there must be a way to identify additional funding to support, in particular, those internal controls that can assist in making sure we don't have any doubt, and the public has no doubt, in the ability of IPED to perform its duties and to report or to conduct its work properly. I I am concerned, and I raised these issues during the APP presentation. The one was related to the critical under-resourcing. The other was the lack of a permanent head of IPED. As Chairperson, the deadline, if I recall, originally was the end of July. The Minister then said it would be done in September. I now see it's on the parliamentary program for the committee for November, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it would be useful for the Deputy Minister just to shed some light on when we can put that matter to bed, so that we can also get an indication that we are moving in the right direction as far as the leadership of IPED is concerned. The other issue that I've raised is a concern, and I don't know how best to put it, but I will do the very best I can. I have an issue with the way the targets are defined, because unless we are assessing the quality of the work that's been done, and perhaps this comes in with your internal controls and verifying, doing quality assurance of the investigations to in an instance where somebody is almost definitely guilty, that there is a conviction, or certainly that there's an increase in the conviction rate. And I recall your response to that particular example that I raised in June or July, that it's not always about finding somebody guilty, as we've seen in the report. It's also about clearing a particular police officer of charges that may have been maliciously laid. But I am concerned about the low conviction rate, the high number of cases that are referred to the NPA, and I think it would be useful for us to know why the NPA declines to prosecute so many cases, just so that the committee fully understands what the reasons are, and whether you are prepared to say to the committee today that it's not due to any poor investigative work. Because I think we need to understand that the quality of our investigation is beyond reproach. And that's a key issue when it comes to credibility and the allegations that I'm very glad have been elevated. I think it's important that we air these issues. I don't think that IPED has covered itself in glory in the communication on the issue, quite frankly. I think that a consistent communication strategy coming out of this entire issue, there were contradictory statements, if I'm not mistaken. There was a comment by a spokesperson that said there was nothing in 2015-16. I think Mr. Sissoko said that there was. Today we hear that there was. So I think that from that point of view as well, IPED must take some responsibility for making sure that in responding to the allegations, that it was clear and open and honest from the outset. And it's not necessarily a case of honesty, but perhaps just contradicting information. And I'm not sure how that emerged. Chairperson, I'm not sure, perhaps I could give us some examples of how we can improve those targets, because if we are simply going to measure the quantity, and we've had this discussion before, and not the quality, are we ever going to be able to measure the actual impact of the work that we're doing? And I mean, what is quite astounding is the improvement, to be fair, the improvement from 65% of targets achieved to 83%. And I'd be very interested to know what the reasons are for such a remarkable improvement in achieving your targets, and whether the targets are going to be now be increased. Because you seem to be exceeding so many targets, in spite of the critical under-resourcing that we are told about. So are those targets, are we going to now increase those targets? Are we going to ensure that we have quality-based targets as opposed to just measuring quantity? Are we going to ensure that we appoint a permanent head of IPED before the end of this year, Chairperson, and that Parliament has the opportunity to have that engagement with the Minister or the Deputy Minister. And as much as we will receive that report on the 18th, that will give us great insight into the issues, and I think it's only fair to allow that report to be concluded. I agree. When will we then be sitting with IPED to interrogate the report and ask them any questions that they may have to answer for? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Matilda. I've just consulted with the table, and the immediate opportunity for us to study the report will be on the 23rd of October.
Could we please diarize the 23rd of October as the date in which IFAD will present to us? Obviously, we want the report to be confidential, so we will allow you to give us the report and we will release it in the meeting. The matter of the appointment of the permanent head will also be addressed on the 23rd. We need a detailed briefing on the process of the appointment of the permanent head. I think we've been shifting the goalposts on the appointment of the head, and we are facing a serious credibility challenge. You face a serious lack of credibility. And if we are inconsistent with the message, if we contradict ourselves, then even the committee has reason to question what is actually happening. If I ask members to give their clear opinions what they had of these worrying media reports, they'll tell you that our members do not have confidence in what is happening. So let me listen to Honorable Wolfgang and then we can continue.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Maybe I should start where the acting head has started. One appreciates the outline of the presentation, but I think it's lacking, and I'm doing this. And I said it many times to my committee colleagues to say, you know, once an educator, we are an educator forever. And I think we need to take it on a positive note. I don't see you saying that this is the responsibility of IPG. This is a document. We can be known. But somebody that keeps up this document in years down the line, they should be able to say that you have explained yourself that what I used to do, or mend it, what is they mean it. Yes, it may, it's okay. But now, the existence of you are saying that the lack of funding, that also compromises ICT independence, which is noted. And I think the increase, you have an increase in workload from 9,097, but now you're on 11,975. And I'm saying that you can be right, and I'm not going to say you're wrong. But I don't get the information that helps me of your employment equity. That is what will be able to direct us where we are going. And as you go there, you must have also a column that says there. We are a subcontinent of this. We have 18 people on this position. And then we have so many people that have resigned. And you also say people with disability. How many do we have? And if you have a program with it, of people with disability, like in the case with us, and then you must be saying to us, you have had so many exit interviews, and these are the challenges, so that you know in future what are the challenges of this retirement. And I think that will be assisting all of us. Now, you are saying referred cases to NPA is 2,000, and secured 91 criminal convictions. And then 2,337 recommendations were referred to staff, and 146 were positive recommendations and negative recommendations, and the last is 207 disciplinary conditions. I want you to clarify me, and then also make it simple for any person in public to say, when you say you have criminal conviction and you have a disciplinary conviction, what are you saying? Who handles what? And why? And what is negative recommendation? You're saying you have 1,464 were positive recommendations, and then 873 negative, and those are things that I wish to have attended from there. My other observation is that, let me, before I go to the observation, I want also to get the clarity. you have recommendation on slide 8 about recommendation by AGSA, but it's okay, you are coming with irregular expenditure in cash. But I don't see anything that tells me about Teresa Botha, the issue there. What is the decision? You are telling us what happened, but I don't get anywhere where you say this is the situation now. I don't get it, and I wish you can just be clarified unless I left it somewhere. Then you go to the next slide of that actual presentation that was done by Mr. Tate. One is happy that you are doing something that has been done by SAPS. No SAPS, that is some people that you're working with, the unit that you're working with, your mother body. When they give you something, they give you such a statement. And you've done it correctly here, and you've done it also correctly here. But I think it's once I see them, the audit opinion. The audit opinion people, they explain to you, they give you a graph to understand what you're talking about, because we are not all in the mathematicians and whatever, but they do that, and I can say that I can commend you for what you've done here. It makes everybody comfortable with what you are saying. You look at that slide 14 and 15, you go back again, you're explaining yourself in whatever you came up with the graph. And I wish that can be something that will help us to go through. You are not actually shying away on explaining what is a fruitless expenditure on what and why, and then irregular expenditure and all that. Then you go to Mr. Lisabe, I can say that this is where actually I became very worried. I just said, you say program one, program two and three, but you don't elaborate on all of them. You said it, that you are presenting, but you are not saying on program one, administration. This is this and this. You come with just 70, 80%, 86%, 2017, 2019. You know, doesn't say much. And then you explain about the legal services, and then you have just one statement at the bottom. You're saying 2018, 2019, the indicator for legal services is between program one and two. If I can want to go further into that, I'll say why, and then what was happening there. And then I want to get the details. And why I'm raising this? Because there's somewhere in this document that says you had, okay, actually it's there. You are saying that on your page 23, number of, percentage of written legal opinions provided to the department, and then you're saying 70%. And then 70% is a percentage. We need numbers. And I said we said it too many. Put the percentage and put the number. I'll tell you about, I think it can remember, made a presentation, and on the presentation of page 42, percentage of responses from MPA, she said 50%. Underneath, she said 100. And then you're showing it's 59%, and you're showing it's 326 or 554. You know, it makes somebody very clear. Those thing of percentages, I don't like them, because people hide behind the percentages. The previous group, the previous secretary, I said to them, we are saying 0.76. What is that? Only one that is 1%. You understand my point? I don't like percentages. I must be honest with that. Number of community outreach events. Clear target, 8. Output, 106. You know, you know what people are talking about. And I think this is something that you can practice, because you are working with human beings and we all make mistakes somewhere. And then you go to something that is very important for me. You give feedback to people that come with complaints. Where do you have it here where you say, we have received so many complaints, this is from community, this is from the head of what in the police so-and-so did this, and that, I don't get it. But when you close the case, you close your case, and then you don't go back to people and give them feedback, you get allegations that goes around to say cases were closed, and then they don't know, because people never heard of any case that was closed, and then with a report. People can say that all those cases that were in, give us the feedback. Will you be able to do it? Maybe that you'll answer later. Because I'm trying to show you that allegations go like that, because somebody will play on you because they know that you won't be able maybe to to produce that information and they will play on that. Those are things that you can put on if there's anything. And we are still on page 23. Percentage vacancy rate per year, 10% output 13 and 13.49. It goes to what I'm saying because here you can say to us that 24 newly created funds, funded posts, but you don't tell us how many are there. And you know, all those things, and that's where actually I just want to go back to it. That's all. You have a lot, but I'm going to be talking before like I just want. And I really agree with Mr. Honorable Wilson to say that maybe we should also wait for the report for some of those things to be PH. But I appreciate what you have done. On number of investigators trained, you know, you are here, things that you define, output 105. It's a number, it's not a percentage. But now, percentage on legal advice provided to investigators before and after investigation, 90%. You know, one will be interested because here we are talking about tax money and money for the country. Is that we should know how many consultations you had in a year or in a period, so that it's not about, and so that next time when they request money, you'll be saying, by the way, I had about 1,000 consultations due to this, I might have a challenge. But if you say 90%, I don't know if you're looking in the audit field, you just allow 90% or you need numbers. Just let us be clarified on that next time when you leave. And I think that is very clear. And then only most of the issues that the members were raising, I will just, I decided to not to also go to what Honorable Christos was saying, because I was going to ask you, what do you think the matter is surfacing again now in the media? And you answered on that, but I have too many questions to that, and I decided that not now, because I was not expecting what you're going to say. And I feel that we should wait because, you know, when you say something that we suspect so and so was there, somebody came and re-employed that person, then the question will be saying, why didn't you query on the employment of that person? So then it means that we are going to probe the employment, re-employment of that person again. That is, I can tell you, I'm going to ask, why was that person re-employed when other businesses, that other person dismissed that person? Because I can tell you it's something internal. But let us leave it there and then we'll wait for the time. Then I wish we can get the performance program on provinces. You know, you have deaths in the police custody, this and this. It goes back to that. You know, there are no details. It's just figures, you know. And I think we need to work with figures and work with the names. We are members of the committee who work on communities. Some of the people, some of the numbers that are here, we know the cases, but we don't know whether it's true. This person falls into this category. Take us in confidence so that we don't come here and sit together and say, by the way, they said this person's issue was with IP, but we don't know where is the matter because we are showing only the numbers. And the numbers are good, but we should be able to know why 3 states is 245 so high, and 125, 49, 46, then you ask yourself, say, how did it be before? We should be able to say that in future those things should be able to be coming down. The last part will be on the issue of, let me leave that one for the next time. Because the report will be coming, thanks to Mr. Mitchell. And then the percentage implementation of integrated communication and stakeholder management. I think you just said the percentage, you didn't say how many stakeholders, the engagement, you've been to where, and all that. I think it would be nice to have columns that helps you, but also I appreciate the honesty of one of your colleagues who said, you know, we can't reach, I think it's the audit lady, we can't reach other provinces due to ABCC. And it helps to be honest with whatever you bring, so that you're not penalized on things that you can't do because of the circumstances. But as for now, I think one is happy with what you're giving, accept that allegation that is stating on the media that the deputy minister was just assisting us to take it through the process, and it will remain allegation until it's revisited. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Parker. Thanks, Chairperson. I think the members have spoken and questioned some of the issues that are going to raise. But the Chair, my concern is the issue of cases that are referred to the NPA and that. I will tell you on page 5. The criminal cases that are referred to SARS and NPA, the total number that I've counted was 14,197. But cases that have been completed, 1,506, is a serious concern. And I think it raises the issue to say that there's a serious issue between the NPA and them of them not resolving cases. So I think it's important that perhaps the magistrate and the deputy minister to check why there is such a delay of many cases. Because for me, one of the things that I had in mind was, how do you measure your performance then? You measure your performance in terms of the cases that you are referred or after the cases are completed. Because for me, the number is huge, because from 14,000 to 1,550 that have been completed is a serious concern. But other issue, you know, that's good, but you know, when you do some wrong things, it kills everything. You appoint people without following DPSA. There was someone that was appointed without following DPSA procedures. And you don't tell us who this person is. This person in a senior position, you don't mention that. There's an issue of appointment, of irregular appointment, because of fidelity security without following proper supply chain management processes. You know, CFO, how did this happen? You appointed Ms. Teresa Porter, but your recommendations, the recommendations by HE says that the investigation to determine whether the official is liable for the loss of trust. The one maybe that has appointed this person. You know, such things, how do you do such things? Maybe you need to explain to us, because you just put something in you and you don't explain in detail. But really, what happened? You know, one of the principles of the clear goal is that you don't spend what you don't have. On the issues that AG has found out is that you have invoices that have not been paid in 30 days. You are saying that the reason for this was because there was no resources. Why do you spend what you don't have? So those are some of my concerns. I will not repeat some of the things that have been said, but I think overall there's an improvement. But what I wanted to ask is that I see that, because yesterday this question I asked, the number of investigations of rape by police officers, one of the things they asked yesterday, because I want to see if you have the same understanding, are these people prosecuted, or are they just for misconduct? What is happening? Can you tell us how do you charge these people, or what is happening when you talk about the target that was exceeded of 65?
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Shebeni. Should I note you also, Honorable? Then I'll give the Honorable Member, then Honorable Shebeni will be the second one.
Acting Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, let me start to commend IPET for the clean audit that they got. I think that is quite an achievement. And keep it up. I can see the responsible person here. She is quite passionate about her work. So please keep that passion and keep it that way. Jefferson, then I must, you know, I have congratulated them, but I'm also quite surprised, and, you know, if that's the case, that's good. The remarkable improvement in performance. And maybe we need to get that formula or whatever, you know, we can install that somewhere else. But that is remarkable, really, you know, from 63, 65% to 83%. Jefferson, some of the things were touched on by my other colleagues, but I need further clarity. You know, the 2,044 cases to the NPA for the second, and we only secured 91 convictions. And my question to this gentleman here is why? Remember, you are supposed, and I don't want to teach you your work, I've done it myself. So you are supposed to determine whether you have a prima facie case, and then refer. And I'm just worried that you are forwarding things that is not properly investigated, unfounded stuff, you know, and, you know, just over flooding this people with unfounded cases that you forwarded. I'm not saying that's the case. But really, something is not lacquer here. I want to know why you say. Jefferson, then, the ratio 128, and we were, you know, confronted with the ratio of 1 to 1,130. Not all police officials are criminals. So you cannot work on that ratio. You must say, you know, the ratio, I would like to see a ratio cases that you receive against your investigators. I mean, you know. So you are including now the National Commissioner also here as a potential criminal. Yes, he is, myself also, but I think it's a skewed picture, Jefferson. Jefferson, then the backlog, that is rather serious. The backlog from NPA. Jefferson, I really think that is something that we need to pursue. You know, really, we cannot have people, you know, resting on decisions that they need to touch. And I think that is something that we need to try to jack up, that you get the ruling on that, and you know that you understand what is to be done. Jefferson, the vacancy rate, and really that is disturbing. That was said that we need to capacitate IFED to do their work and to do it properly. So the vacancy rate, you know, really, what I also saw, and I need clarification from the financial man, apparently, going through this financial documentation, and I just rushed through it, apparently you spend quite a large bit of your amount very late in the financial year. And why is that? What happened? Happened you've done your things in the beginning, or what was that? Chairperson, okay, let's get to the unavoidable. I also have some questions regarding the allegations in the media. And I do agree with my colleagues that we need to wait, you know, to have the proper sort of report and then make an assessment. So I'm only asking further questions. You did an investigation at the time, we were told. And my question is, did you only find this, is it only restricted to housing? Or did you find similar incidences, transgressions in the other provinces? Because, you know, the story that you convey to us is now it's only restricted to housing. That is my understanding. I want to know whether that's the fact. Something that worries me also. Yes, I took note of the fact that the criminal case is obviously being investigated now by the SAP, so they are investigating you now. But your investigation to determine the position, was it done by yourself? and only voice by yourself. Reason being, the reason I'm asking is, remember you have a credibility problem now already. Now, you know, if you investigate yourself now, people can say, hey, you know, can we really believe it or not? I'm not saying you can't, please. But I'm saying we need to build some credibility in your investigation to ensure that people will believe you, you know, going forward. Chairperson, then they use a term here in their document. Yeah, let's focus first on the irregular expenditure. Yes, you gave an explanation of that. You know why that happened, but that is quite a sizable amount. And we'll have to take action to manage that down. They use this term here in, you know, the stuff that they're dealing with, ready for decision, or what is that? Fact of the matter is, you even have a target for death. How do you determine that? Rate that is going to happen. Decision ready. What is the term? What do you mean by that? And if there is a decision taken, so what now? You took the decision, so what is the next step now? Chairperson, for now I'm going to stick the stop there. Thank you.
thank you, Honorable Shemini.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to congratulate the IPT for the performance. I've got a few questions here. A lot has been said. But I was just concerned about when you say with late cases because of the report, like a J88 report. No, I agree with that. Because the J88 report, you get it immediately when you're being assaulted or whatever. Meaning if there was a document in the letter. If it's a new thing, and then the person is referred to the doctor with the J88, and then you get it immediately. Unlike other DNA issues and the like. So with the issue of the J88, I disagree. Something must be done, unless if there's something nice. There are reports that we can get immediately. So we will deal with those cases immediately, unless otherwise. Coming to the staff, I want to find out about the implementation of Section 23 of the IPT. That is it being implemented or not? If not, why? Because there is a major complaint by the members that they are supposed to be in line with the investigators of the South African Police Service. So I just want to find out about that concept. Is it implemented? Is it in progress? Why? If it's not, why? Prioritizing.
Honorable Shabin, may I interrupt you for a second, please? Honorable Faku is alternate, so she has to go to another committee. I thought that before she leaves, you know, could we give you an opportunity to respond to her? So that you understand why she's leaving, it's not that she's just asking a question and then she's leaving. But let us also respect her and try and respond to her question. Is that okay, Honorable Shimon?
No problem. Thank you.
Just as respectful, remember she's an alternate, but she comes here every day. I respect that. Hey. Thank you.
Do we, Chairperson, only deal with your question
first? Yes, last question.
Okay. I will deal with some of the questions and then my colleagues will then come in there.
That's her question.
Yes, that's her question. The one question that she asked was to say we didn't indicate the level of official officially the deputy director, which is level 12 in government, or level 11, yeah. And then the one about fidelity, that you hear from, we'll talk about it to see what happened. But basically what caused the irregular expenditure was two things. But firstly, there was no signed contract between Fidelity and IPC, whereas they rendered the service for IPC, so that becomes an irregular. And then secondly, the second issue was that the contract was extended for further 3 months. Initially it was supposed to be only for 3 months, but then it was also extended for additional 3 months without national treasury approval. So if the amount exceeds 15%, we have to go to national treasury to get approval. So at that stage, there was no approval in terms of the extension. And then the other question, I think Mr. Sir can deal with, what delays the prosecution and how we measure our performance. And also, Kate, prepared to supplement.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. I think first, with regard to cases that we refer to SAPS and NPA, we conduct an investigation. Based on the outcome of that investigation, we then have to decide. Some of the cases you will find that the evidence suggests that there's a crime committed. And if there's a crime committed, then we have to refer to the NPA for the NPA to make a decision whether to prosecute or not to prosecute. In other cases, you find that there may not be evidence indicating that there's a crime committed, but however, the evidence suggests that there's a misconduct that has been committed. So then you refer to the SAPS that disciplinary action to be taken. So our investigation is twofold in that way. So when we conduct, especially when you say there's a crime committed, invariably it means there is also a misconduct. So you then have that dual way of sending recommendations to SAPS and then send also to NPA. How we measure our performance, we've discussed this, and one of the members also asked this issue. The issue is we're an investigative body. Our work is to conduct an independent and impartial investigation. So that is why we measure our performance by quality investigation conducted that are decision ready. We are saying decision ready for those that must make decisions, like the NPA, whether to prosecute or not, or the SAPS, or the chief disciplinary action in those circumstances. So we don't measure ourselves by convictions because we don't have control over that. I don't go to court and prosecute someone. A case can be investigated, and on paper, you can have a good case. Witnesses, everything there. But when you go to court, it can collapse, because maybe witnesses are fabricated, or maybe they couldn't stand cross-examination, and so forth. Those things happen. I cannot be held accountable why a case could not be convicted in court because of what transpired during trial, because that's not my job. My job is that of an investigator. And my job is to find the truth. The truth may be that that police officer has done nothing wrong, or the police officer has done something wrong. That is why you see we have positive recommendations, we've got negative recommendations. Positive recommendations, you say, based on the evidence we have, there's no evidence that the police has done anything wrong. So we clear the police officer. Negative recommendation is that based on the evidence we have, there's an indication that a police officer has conducted a misconduct, therefore it must be disciplined. So that is how our work is done. It will be unfair of us to be charged on convictions when we don't do we don't prosecute cases ourselves. So that is why we incidentally yesterday I was watching Judge Mokwe, who was arguing actually that even prosecutors cannot be charged on conviction, because it shouldn't be about that, but rather about finding what the truth is. And in fact, the judges and the magistrates are the ones who must make a decision whether a person is guilty of an offense or not. So that is where we are. So whether and the other issue that the members must understand is that we are the only body that investigates the police. Police are people who are operating within the criminal justice space. They understand the criminal justice. We had done a research some years ago and find that on average our cases were taking up to 4 years on the court roll, because they will come with all technicalities to delay the case from going. So those are some of the challenges. So it's not like a police officer investigating a civilian who does not understand the criminal justice system, and it can go quick. With us it's different. It takes a bit longer. So we may refer a lot of cases to the NPA, but the actual outcome of that and the actual conclusion of those matters may take a bit longer than we want to, but it's something that is outside our control.
Honorable
Chair, I thought that the committee has covered me on its response related to the illegal expenditure and why it was in case. With regard to the 30 days invoices, for the past three financial years, IPT reported what we call accruals. What happened is that we had our contractual obligations, offices, securities that we are paying on monthly basis. But with the continuous cut of budget by National Treasury, we end up not fully funding our contractual obligations. At some stage, we were paying our contractual obligation up to September, far before the end of the financial year. So then, in that case, you then account through the outstanding invoices to the new financial year, and you pay them in the following financial year. But when you pay them, they've already exceeded 30 days. That is why we were reporting a collection. Thanks.
I just wanted to highlight it to what CFO. I think CFO, you said it's a report that we're dealing with. It's what looks to be on the report. Because we put a statement in, we leave a big question mark. So thank you for your response.
Yeah, that's the question which they asked for, that if a police officer rapes a person, you call it a rape or a sense, you call it a misconduct.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for not getting up that. It's a criminal offence. If a case of rape is open, it's a criminal offence. As I've indicated before, that we do a dual recommendation. So if it's rape, for instance, we'll then say NPA, make a decision to prosecute here. But SAPS, here's a misconduct, because if the police officer rape, it's also a misconduct in terms of their own regulations, because it's a crime.
Thank you very much, Honourable Papu. Honourable members, it seems that we need a break. Can we still continue?
I suggest we continue. And yes. The reason why it will help is I will need to be excused because I must still travel. But I want to be excused after the...
I'm ready to continue. So we'll continue on the whole. Sorry, I just interrupted because I wanted us to respond. Because only say on the whole part, I'm sure that takes care of your question. You are ready on the whole. Sorry for interrupting you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I've got the last two questions here. What initiatives have been taken to ensure the filling of vacancies in the IPT? And then the last one will be the prioritizing of cases. I've seen that there are cases that have been prioritized, but now we want to find out what methodology that you have been used to prioritize those cases that you've got high of loan. How did it affect me that the low profile cases by the high profile cases? Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Honorable Peacock?
Thank you, Chair. Mine would be that in most of the questions asked by the other members, one point that I've observed regarding the presentation as well as the annual report document is that most of the issues that we've been questioning or the members have raised questions on, they are all here. Mm-hmm. And especially when I go back to what Honorable Mokokeng mentioned, the issue of organograms, it's there. The only thing is that it was a condensed presentation. Mm-hmm. Hence, you'll see even the question that Honorable Faku asked about the recommendation of the irregular expenditure and so forth. The answers were there because when he did the presentation, he indicated the action plan. The only problem was that the action plan was not drafted here. But while he was doing his presentation, he was referring to all these findings and giving recommendations as well as the plan on how are they intend to rectify. So that was the point that I wanted to raise.
You may start with the response.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I will start with the question on communication. I think this one, Chairperson, I want to say, if you are a leader, you will take anything that is good or bad. That's what I know it's a little to hold. So you have to take everything. So I will accept that and apologize to the committee. And then I think the questions that were asked by Honorable Minister, they've been addressed by the desktop, but if there's anything, you can emphasize those questions. And then the questions that Memo Fukien asked, I always look forward to your input, Mem, because it helps us to improve the society, and I appreciate the feedback that we got. And some of the comments that you made, we make sure that we implement them so that next time when you come here, we have addressed the concerns that you raised. I think there was a question that Honorable Mukim asked on slide number 8 that refers to the issue of a lot of words that could say what is the current situation. The current situation is that we are in the process of approaching the Labour Court so that it can make a decision on the matter. It's only the Labour Court that can either say the appointment, regularize the appointment, or set it aside. So the official will be given a chance to go to court and make her submission in terms of the requirement, and then the court will then make a decision to say we are setting aside the appointment or we are regularizing it. So that is the progress in terms of that matter. I think the other question you raised was in terms of disciplinary recommendation, positive vis-a-vis negative. Mr. Sobo touched on that, but we can expand again on those matters. And then the matters that Ms. Falco raised, we've addressed those questions. And then the question that Honorable Funeval raised, I think Mr. Stockholm will deal with that. Mr. Stockholm will do this in detail with those questions. And then there was also the question that Honorable Shambeni raised. I will deal with the issue of Section 23 and then also deal with the issue of the process or initiatives to fill the position.
So on the issue of Section 23, Honorable Member, we are in the process of implementing. So we had challenges in terms of implementing. There were two main issues that were delaying us. It was the issue of the pension fund, because we needed to adjust the pension from 13% to 16%. So that process looking at and actually to quantify to say how much is the liability that IBIC needs to pay to GTF. So that process was finalized, I think it was last month. So we are now expected to make a payment to GTF. And then the other outstanding matter was the issue of PowerMed, because one of the benefits that members of SAPS received is PowerMed, which is heavily subsidized. So what we requested to SAPS was to say, can you grant us access? Because the legislation compels us for our members to be to get the same benefit with the TFZ. So that's why we had challenges, because SAPS initially they were not in favor of that. We had several discussions. We thought we had agreed, but then all of a sudden we got a letter to say, no, we can't allow it. So we are what we are going to be doing now is to approach the minister to intervene on this matter. As soon as it is resolved, to be in a position then to can implement Section 23. And then in terms of filling of positions, we are in the process. Most of the positions, especially the senior management ones, so we are currently conducting interviews and shortlisting processes. It's currently underway, and I'm pushing the team to make sure that this post are filled as a matter of urgency. So I will then allow Mr. Christopher to deal with the other issues.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Honourable Chair, I tried to deal with the issues of the target and how we craft our targets as an institution. I think the other issue that you raised was why so many cases are declined. And it goes back again to the issue that we raised, that we must understand that most of the cases that are reported to us is cases where victims are in contact with the police. And more often than never, you find that there are no witnesses except the police officers that are there. You are unlikely to find police officers giving you a statement that says another police officer has committed or assaulted a person. So those are some of the difficulties that we have. But the reality is that every investigation that we conduct, once we are satisfied that we've done everything that needs to be done in terms of that investigation, we present that to the prosecutors. Some of the cases, even when we present them, ourselves as investigators, we are of the view that the case is not strong enough to warrant a prosecution. But remember that it is not our call. The decision on prosecution only rests with the MPA. The only time that we won't send a case to the MPA, Honorable Jeff Blanche, is when, for instance, our victim cannot even identify who that police officer is. So there is no point in sending, because what are you expecting the prosecutor to decide on? However, even when we believe that the evidence is weak, but because an allegation is made and there are suspects that have been identified who are alleged to have committed an offense, we still have to present that to the prosecutors, who must make a decision, because we do not have the constitutional mandate to make a decision on prosecution. Only the MPA can do that. So that is why we have to send these cases to MPA. The issue of convictions, I think I've dealt with it. the credibility of the investigations that you've raised on these allegations that are in the media. I've indicated that the unit that is investigating this is as per our IPED Act. The Act provides for the unit to be established, the integrity strengthening unit, to exactly do that, to look at the integrity of the work of our investigators, including also our investigators, whether they have integrity or not. So that is what they do. They are not located within the program investigation. They are separate from us so that we give them that independence that they cannot be seen to be bodies with our investigators to an extent that they can even cover up any wrongdoing. So they are very independent, and they report to program four and directly to the executive director on their way. So that's how we try and delineate it so that we don't have influence on the work that they do. The investigation, as we've indicated, when it initially surfaced, it was about the KZN office and Gauteng office. So we then said they must investigate all these issues in all the provinces. However, because they started with the Gauteng office, their investigation started with Gauteng office. They have to go through all these cases and check what had happened. That is why you already have people who have been dismissed and so forth. So the incidences were picked up in Gauteng province. It does not mean it's only there. We don't know yet until we get the final report from them. Then we'll know how pervasive, if this situation was pervasive, and we'll be able to deal with it accordingly. With regard to issues of J88, Honorable Chairman, it's true that most of the cases when they are reported, for instance, an assault, then a person will be directed to go to a doctor of the J88 and get that. But it's not always the case. Sometimes victims of assault don't go immediately to the doctor. When a matter is brought to us, then we advise them to go to a doctor. Sometimes they went to a doctor, to a private doctor, open the case later. Now we must get the private doctor to provide us with the J88. So some of the delays with regard to the J88 is because of that. Sometimes they went to hospital, the doctor who had seen that the patient is the one who must do the J88, then you must find them and get a file and all that. And if you understand the situation of our public health system, it's not always easy to get it immediately. So sometimes it takes some time. So those are some of the challenges that we meet with regard to issues relating to J88. With regard to what methodology we use to prioritize cases, and we said this before, that given our constrained resources, we had to make a decision, a strategic decision, to say we receive, for instance, as we've indicated here, it's almost 6,000 cases that we receive, but the capacity of the investigators we have is not enough to be able to investigate all of these cases. Then we had to make a strategic decision to say, when we receive these cases, which cases do we prioritize because of their importance, because of the impact? So that decision was then that we will then prioritize cases like death cases, rape cases, corruption cases, for instance. That does not mean the other cases were not going to investigate. But if I immediately receive a case of assault and a case of death, which one do I do first? I will do a death first, because it's more serious, it's more impact than the assault one. So the assault will be done, but it will not receive the priority that the death will receive. Similarly with rape and corruption and so forth. So that's how we did our prioritization. One of the discussions we've had as a result also of the discussion that are happening at the JCPS cluster, we said then we must start also looking even within the assault case and say, can we also prioritize those where women and children? are victims, so that we give them also that priority, because of the government priority on these kind of cases. Thank you.
I'll ask the acting CFO to respond to the finance director.
Chair, I think all the questions that were raised for finance, I think mostly they were related to irregular expenditure, except the one with regard to, I think Honorable Mofokeng related to the budgetary constraints vis-a-vis the compromise independency, what we mean there. During our presentation, I think one of the issues that we raised is that we are now depending on SAS in certain areas to do our work, like ballistic. We don't have our own laboratory. Therefore, when you do your work, you have to go to SAS for that. So somehow it compromises your independency, because you investigate SAS, you go and do ballistics in SAS. So that is one of the parts we have been engaging with National Treasury. One of the reports that was issued, I think Falun Commission report, also indicated these weaknesses for IP. So we are looking into that. Each and every time when we engage National Treasury, we raise these issues of independence. And then the other issue raised by Honorable on the issues related to late procurement, the question was, why do you spend towards the end of the financial year? Yes, it happened in some cases where you find that you for the during the financial year you exhausted your funds, and towards the end of the financial year you identify funds where you did not spend. Like in this case, it was the delay in filling the position. So once you have identified such funds, you then engage National Treasury for what we call an internal fund shift, so that you can reallocate funds to where they are needed most. So by that doing, then by the time they give you an approval, it will be towards the end of the financial year, then you have to implement whatever that you have requested funds for. Thank you.
I think it also covers what Honorable Peacock said. Thank you. And then the head of data will then expand again on Section 33 for the country.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Deputy Minister. With regards to Section 23, the last court order that was before the Court of Records, delivered by the court on the 20th of August this year, also gave us a certain period to deal with the implementation of Section 23. What the court also ordered is that every 20th of each month, we must file an explanatory affidavit to the court to indicate the progress that has been done in the matter. So currently there is a task team within the ICIP that is dealing with Section 23, and it is the duty of that task team to deal with the implementation of Section 23, which, because of the stance that the government pension fund has taken, is now shortened. So we have a period of 3 months to implement, but we have actually made great strides. And also, I think another suggestion that was made was that on the task team, members of the labor unions must also form part of the task team, so that they're also kept abreast with what is happening with the implementation. But of course, with the filing of the explanatory affidavit every 20th of the month, they are able to see a progress on that affidavit that is filed. Thank you.
There's an issue which both the chair said we will discuss it on the 23rd, the finalization of the post. The post was advertised and it has closed. So we will have to do shortlisting and interviews, but that is where it is on the report. But we will further update you on the 23rd when we come to deal with the report of Albert. Thank you.
Maybe before we close on this, is there anything that members need to finalize and plan to seek in? I don't know, on the issue of, I think it's Honorable Sister Branch, I don't know if you answered to when I was out about why do you have a target for them? Thank you.
One thing, while you, I decided to keep quiet on this,
it is obvious. The response that everyone gave me, I mean, you could see this is an investigator, he knows his job, management, he knows it very well. But the one thing that I think that I just want to emphasize, so you are saying that there is a possibility that as your investigation progresses, that we can find similar incidents in the other provinces, like the, you know, we have found in Gauteng and where was that case again? So you are saying that. Thank you.
I would like the Deputy Minister to be closing on this, but I would request that the only question that I've been asking, I wish that on the police, but maybe next time, so that you can get help from the police, because they will be working on the forensic improvement, all the reports of the DNA, the postmortem and others. Leave them as they go with category so that they can be able to see where you're best next time. Because it's just a statement that you're having challenges there. But I know that you said it's one of the issues that we touched and that the Deputy Minister will be looking at them so that you get capacity into them and see on your third task what is it that is failing. Can I give over to the Deputy Minister?
Okay, thanks very much. You know, we are very clear at the leadership of the South African police service that the success of IPED will speed up the professionalization of the service. But of course, we spoke about it this morning. I said, you know, when they succeed and they do their work very well, they are also preparing their own exit. It's one of the institutions in government which we have established that at the same time we have laid the foundation for their disappearance. Because as soon as the South African police is professional, understand the human rights and how, in fact, they understand how they must conduct themselves within the context of our constitution today, they become irrelevant. Because they are relevant for as long as you have some element within the police service who does not understand how certain cases must be handled and they misuse their position of authority. Then the police service of the police comes into play. So it's an important institution and we agree that we must capacitate them so that they can speed up that process. We know that there are those who see the South African Police Service and the IPED as people who are contesting for the retention. But these are necessary tensions that will lead to growth, and we will be able to create a platform where in the synergy of what a platform be created where they can interface the problems that they have with the police must assist them. That should happen for the benefit of the police, because when they succeed, it's for the benefit of the police. So we'll do what is possible to make sure that we resolve the challenges that they have. When we come back to report in the next financial year, I'm confident that there will be improvement with regard to the challenges that they have. Like I said earlier on the Secretariat, that as we interact with you, we become wiser than before we came in here, because you are able to show us an angle that we are not seeing because we are busy playing in the field. But from your vantage point, you are able to make observations that make us better, including on how we can improve on the submissions that we come and present to you here. Your advices are taken in good spirit and we will integrate them into our presentations going forward. But thank you very much for the opportunity you have given us, and I would like to apologize for my inability to be with you tomorrow because of work engagements in Bobo. But the CIRA will be here, they will make the presentation. What they are presenting is what
we have agreed with them that should be presented here. So we are not absolving ourselves because we want the president to take full responsibility on what they will present. Thank you very much.
Thanks, DM. I wish that you were here last time when they were presenting. I think that is a group we commented on the way they were presenting. They gave each other an opportunity to present like they did yesterday. But they're still professional. It was amazing. So for not being there, don't be scared. They know the game now. Thank you very much, members, and also to the team from IPIS, to the Deputy Minister. I think our meeting is adjourned. We have the day tomorrow. Today is not for the block. You can see that I'm reviewing. I think we have a...